too, if you would get us started in the right foot, and we'll are prepared to listen and work.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I've just distributed to you several handouts, and I'll try to point out what each one represents just briefly. You have one that has on the front of it the agenda for today and just tells you who will be speaking today. And that's followed by some LFO handouts, which I'll cover in a few minutes. There's also a handout that looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division's handout, which they will cover later on in the presentation. And then you also have some information from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, which we'll be hearing about today. And they also will cover that later in the presentation. And we're going to try to stay as close as possible to the format of the presentation, with the understanding that some of these smaller agencies, it would be kind of redundant at points presentation format. So just kind of bear with us. We'll try to get everything on the list that applies, but it may not be in exact order. So,
and I read that we'll reserve questions till
that's correct,
the end,
Mr.
And,
Chair. We'd like
Representative Winters did a great job this morning in Human Services.
To try to keep everyone on track.
Exactly.
Right. Here, here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for mentioning that. What we'd like to do.
See Senator Miller.
No, I don't want to see that.
It took the opposite approach.
What we'd like to do is have the Legislative Fiscal Office mm-hmm. overview first, and then the agency will come up and do, again, a high-level overview for you. The Department of Administrative Services staff will come up. And then when we get back into the agency's detail about the budget, that's when we'd like you to ask your questions.
Okay.
Unless they're just really burning questions and you're afraid you're going to forget them. Then we'd understand.
And if you're afraid you're going to forget them, just write them down.
Better remember where we left it.
So first, if I could direct your attention to the sheets behind the agenda that I pointed out to you. I've just got a sheet there. It's one page front and back. It's a little orientation and background about this budget. The first section there, the agency role, budget size, and budget drivers, I referred you.
Sure. I've invited Senator Gordley to sit with us. And Abel, thank you very much for being here with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Anyway, I've referred you to some handouts that I prepared, and those are right behind that one-page sheet. And that handout, it looks like a... out of my binder here. Like this. Just slides that are printed front and back. And basically tells you what the agency does. And this agency establishes rules for licensure and registration, as well as issues licenses and registrations to teachers, administrators, school nurses, and other education personnel. They maintain and enforce professional standards for and proper assignment of licensed and registered educators. And then they adopt standards for and approve teacher education programs at colleges and universities in Oregon. And then if you flip that page over, you'll see that this budget is comprised entirely of other funds revenue sources, and I'll get into a little bit more detail about that in a moment. And the budget is approximately $3 million, and it includes 17.5 FTE. And then that last slide down there just shows you some of the budget drivers in this budget, or for the budget, the 2001-03 biennium. You go back to that first page, the orientation and background page. Under agency revenue sources, as I mentioned, this budget is supported entirely by other funds. It generates these other funds primarily through the fees paid by regulated professionals, the teachers, administrators, school nurses, and the other education personnel. There are also some fees generated by fingerprinting and charter school teacher registration. And then I've referred you to the revenue tab in your budget notebook if you want additional details, such as the fee levels. And this budget anticipates a little bit more than $3 million in the governor's budget, and that's a slight decrease from this biennium, and the agency will get into the reasons for that when it does its presentation. And then we were to discuss any budget notes with you. There are no budget notes from the 99 legislative session for the commission. we were to discuss any audit reports with you, and there were no audits completed within the past 2 years, so we won't have any of those to discuss. We're also to discuss with you any interim reports and studies, and there was a bill from last session, House Bill 3307, which required the commission to report to the interim committees on education prior to October 1st, 2000, on two things. On one, the quality of preparation available in Oregon for teachers who will teach physical education in kindergarten through grade 12. And two, the extent to which teachers who teach physical education in kindergarten through grade 12 are adequately prepared to fulfill their assignments. And this report was to be made jointly by the commission, the State Board of Education, and the State Board of Higher Education. And they reported to the interim committees as required by the statute. And what I've provided for you in your LFO packet is a copy of the executive summary from that report. And the full report looks like this, which is why I did not copy it for you. But if you do want a copy of the full report, we can certainly make that available to you. And again, when the commission gets into discussing its budget in detail, if you have questions about what's contained in the report, you can ask them then.
Sue, I don't recall. Does that report have an agency summary? I mean, an executive summary?
Yes, it does, and I've handed that out for you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, it's in your packet there.
Okay.
The last one, last handout. And then if you flip over the orientation and background sheet, the first item on the second page is fee adjustment. And you'll hear that the governor's budget includes two fee increases. The first one would increase the initial and renewing license fee from $60 to $75. That's for in-state licenses. And this would take place January 1st, 2002. The agency already has a statutory authority to raise this fee. And so what would happen is if this budget is approved, and they would go ahead during the 2001-03 biennium, raise the fee after getting approval from DAS, and then they would come back to the 2003 Legislative Assembly to have that ratified. So you don't need to approve that fee increase. They've already got statutory authority to do that. They're also looking to increase the fee for late renewal applications from $15 to $25 per month. And again, they have the statutory authority to do that as well. The next thing that we were supposed to discuss with you would be significant policy or oversight issues considered by the emergency board or interim committees. And to my knowledge, there were no significant issues. And then lastly, relevant issues, trends, or special challenges. And what I've noted there is that they've been experiencing some significant increases in their legal costs over the last couple of biennia. They recently visited the emergency board to get other funds expenditure limitation for increased costs in this biennium, and a policy package has been included in the governor's budget to address that, and they'll talk about that in more detail when they do their presentation. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to the agency, have them do the high-level summary, and then we'll have the Department of Administrative Services staff come up and talk about the governor's recommended budget.
Thank you, Sue. David?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm David Mighton, Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. And with me is Carolyn Ortman, who is a member of the Commission's Executive Committee. Carolyn is also the Chair of the School Board in Hillsboro and an officer in the Oregon School Boards Association. She's agreed to come and speak on behalf of our Executive Committee, in that Mary Colonna, who is the Chair this year, was unable to get over from Redmond today for this meeting. Carolyn has agreed to speak briefly about the composition of the commission and what its responsibilities are, so I'll turn it to her.
Carolyn, welcome to the committee, and thank you for the good work that you and your board are doing in the Hillsborough District. I'm so proud of them. They may be as good as Beaverton someday.
Wow, that's high praise. Thank you, Senator Hartung and committee. As David said, I do have a few hats that I wear, and I am especially proud of this. It's been a really enlightening committee for me, and the commission does some really important work that affects students and people all over this state. Commission does have a mission statement, and it's something that we constantly look at, and our goal is that every commissioner would be able to just flip it off at the an ask, and that is that we want to ensure that every student is taught by competent and ethical educators. We are a 17-member commission appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. We represent myself, one school board member across the state. We represent two general public members. We represent high schools, high school and secondary and elementary teachers. We represent private and public universities and colleges in the state. We represent superintendents. We represent ESB superintendents, elementary and secondary teachers, as I said. As was stated before, we do have an executive director, that's Dr. Mighton, and we do have 17 support staff, and we are funded purely by our license fees. The commission has three primary responsibilities. We start out with, we have 17 private and public universities and colleges in the state of Oregon, and we oversee in excess of 360 programs that affect education and the teaching of education at those colleges and universities. So one of the primary responsibilities of the commission is to establish the rules, to adopt standards for approval of college and university teacher education programs, and approve those programs and the modifications to those programs. An example of that would be the new standards that came out that we make sure that our programs to teach teachers how to become teachers, students how to become teachers, that they would meet those same levels of criteria that we would expect from our K-12 students. The second level is that we establish rules for licensure, and we issue those licenses to teachers, to administrators, to school nurses and other education personnel, counselors and the like, and make sure that our license structure is set up to not restrict good people who deserve to be teachers, but that we try to work with those issues related to shortages, et cetera. The third area is something that I'm involved with at the commission level. I chair, as an executive commission member on the executive board, I chair the discipline committee. We also have a responsibility to maintain professional standards of that competent and ethical performance, and we need to make sure that on those occasions that we need to offer discipline, that happen in a consistent, fair, and appropriate manner. So those are the three primary responsibilities that the commission oversees. We have some goals that are stated for you. I'm not going to read them all, but we believe that it's our responsibility to be effective community communicators, that we need to be proactive. We need to simplify our process. We need to be user-friendly. We need to be the best oversight agency that we can be to all of our stakeholders, and that we do need to address some of those shortage issues, whether they be geographic, discipline, or diverse groups. We do promote alternative pathways for educator licenses, while at the same time we work really hard to maintain high standards. And we want to attract and have been working, especially in the last year, on ways that we can attract students, better students and more students into the teaching profession. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to David so that he can finish talking about our agency.
Thank you, Carolyn, for your help with that. The commission has existed since 1965, but it was advisory to the Board of Education until 1973, when the three responsibilities that are mentioned were transferred to the commission. The statute is pretty narrow in that regard. The commission does not have jurisdiction over a lot of other aspects of teaching that some people in the public think we might have. For example, the laws on dismissal of teachers are not under the commission. That's under the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. Requirements for continuing professional development and resources to encourage educators and to help them do that are generally under the Oregon Department of Education. But all of these are parts of a larger picture. And one of the reasons we brought along this brochure that is attached to the back of your packet is to show the kind of collaboration and the number of agencies that participate in the improvement of teacher education and the improvement of licensed teachers. This document shows not only the partners that we have from OEA, COSA, and OSBA, but lists also the public and private teacher education institutions. The major changes since the commission has been established have actually been rather minor changes. The most recent one is one we have listed in this handout to you today. The commission had undertaken the redesign of teacher preparation following the passage of House Bill 3565. Now, the commission was not mentioned in that bill, but soon after it passed, the commission and our stakeholders recognized that it was going to be necessary to make changes in teacher education and licensure if the goals of that legislation were to be realized. And so with the assistance of the Board of Education, the Board of Higher Ed, three joint action plans were established over the next 5 years that led to the redesign of licensure in 1999. That isn't real fresh and urgent news at this point, but it is one of the accomplishments that the commission has looked back on with a good deal of satisfaction, that the planning that was done was collaborative and the direction that was set was certainly forward-looking, in that it recognized the importance of the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards and built into the new licensure system a provision for recognition of that national certificate. We brought along a little brochure that describes the teacher education programs and the changes to them. It's a green brochure that has the printing slightly askew on the front, and inside is a flowchart showing how the person who is prepared in a pre-service program, whether an undergraduate or a graduate level program, would qualify for initial and continuing licensure. The other change that is more recent is that a requirement that we fingerprint all educators at renewal sunsetted in January 2000 after 5 years of fingerprinting all of the applicants at renewal of licensure. And the reason that that's important today in this conversation is that the fingerprinting requirement skewed our budget significantly and made it appear that we had an enormous budget when, in fact, almost all the money was flow-through. Of a $42 fee for fingerprinting, 24 of it went to the FBI and 12 to state police. We'll be talking more about that in the detail about the budget, but those are the two recent accomplishments that we wanted to talk about. There is attached also to the white pages that you have a spreadsheet that has very little numbers and is a challenge to anyone my age. But this shows you the number of licenses that are issued, the amount of correspondence received, written responses, number of visitors, and so on. Again, we can talk about that in some detail later in the presentation. The number of cases that we're involved with in disciplining of educators continues to grow, and that's one of the reasons for the problem with AG costs that that Ms. McGlashan indicated earlier. We think we have a more permanent fix to that problem. and coming to the emergency board as we had to do this year. And so that's built in as one of our policy packages. With regard to the control of costs, our commission has been quite frugal over the years. We do have a fee increase built into this budget, but it's the first fee increase since October 1994. And inflation has caught up with us, and it's necessary in order for us to continue with all of the programs to request a fee increase during this session. With regard to our ability to interface with other agencies, this has been a problem for us for many years. In 1984, when the commission went off of the state's mainframe and was advised by DAS to purchase a mini computer, we ended up with wiring equipment. And while it was very serviceable and certainly was a great workhorse, it wasn't very friendly in talking to anyone else's computer. And over the years, it too became obsolete and no new parts were available for the equipment. So several years ago, the commission started saving ahead to try to replace that and to get into a system that is more common in the business world. And we have just completed transition to an NT-type server with Access and Microsoft Office products. And this enables us to coordinate with other agencies. We have three of those agencies that we're required to coordinate with: the Oregon Department of Education, the Department of Revenue, and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. The question was raised about the ratio of our administrative staff to the clerical and classified staff. And we've provided a little bit of information for you here on the folk that are working in a supervisory role and the nature of the people that they're supervising. Finally, on the policy legislation item I, Senate Bill 324 is scheduled for a hearing tomorrow. That bill was introduced at the commission's request by the governor and would create a special fund into which the commission could solicit contributions. And the interest from that fund would be used to pay for national board certification applications. That application fee is $2,300 this year, and our experience in a pilot project with OEA over the last 2 years suggests that just paying that application fee is a significant incentive. We believe that over the long haul, this could turn into a continuing form of support for National Board certified teachers.
That's true. Senator, are we in the question period now?
No, I'd rather hear the three presentations and then we'll come back to it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have just one more point, and then we're finished. This has to do with affirmative action. Our agency, of course, is a part of DAS, and personnel services are provided through DAS, and the administrative policies for the recruitment and hiring of personnel are within the parameters of DAS in terms of affirmative action.
Okay, fine. David, would you and Carolyn remain at the desk? And Linda, if you would represent DAS, please, and speak into the mic loudly. Thank you.
Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services, and I'm going to do a quick summary on the governor's recommended budget. It's this handout. The first chart just gives you the overall picture and all the numbers. You can see they're all other funds, no general fund. The governor's recommended budget is about $3.1 million. That's over a 5% decrease from the legislatively approved level and a 3.9% increase over their current service level. They have 17 and a half positions in the recommended budget, which is a half position less than they had this biennium. And we'll go through some of the decreases and what they mean. The next chart just shows that they're all other fund. I apologize for putting these in, but we're trying to be standardized so that you can kind of get used to the same presentations to different agencies. But of course, when you're all one fund, it's sort of silly. On slide page four, you can see their governor's recommended budget at the 5.4% decrease allows them to continue all programs at current levels, reduces funding. Two pieces of major reduction. Reduces funding to reflect the changes in the fingerprinting requirements, and it also takes out some one-time costs for past computer projects. And then the one major enhancement is attorney general costs. The next slide, again, this small agency runs their entire agency as one program, the whole $3.1 million. About 56% of their budget is for personal services. You see a small chunk is for special payments. That's actually the pass-through money that comes in for fingerprints and then goes to state police. And the rest is services and supplies. Although part of their services and supplies budget, as David mentioned, is actually another piece of the fingerprinting fees that goes to the FBI. So you're seeing more than just what they spend on staff and paper and computers there. On page seven, a little bit of detail in developing their budget. Two emergency boards. One was the standard salary adjustment that was given to all agencies at the February emergency board. The other is $144,000 expenditure limitation for the development of web-based technology, this will allow teachers to submit their applications online, allows for some more interactive web data and reporting, and eventually will allow e-commerce as DAS and Information Resources Management Division gets that part of the state system developed. The current service level budget contains standard position increases and inflationary changes, state government service charges. The two major reductions in their budget then was the $209,000 for one-time technology initiatives in the past. That included the $144,000 that they received at the emergency board. And it also included about another $65,000 that was for their initial database conversion, which they finished about a year ago. The other reduction, $204,000 reduction and a half-time position, had to do with the partial phasing out of the fingerprint program. The commission was directed by the 95 legislature to do a one-time criminal check on each educator as they renewed their license. That requirement ended last January, a year ago, and from now on they'll only do fingerprint checks on new applicants. So they just need to do a lot fewer checks now than they did in the past. The reduction in budget reflects mainly a reduction in that pass-through revenue expenditures that came through the agency. And the last slide, summary of their policy packages. Package 100, computer support for about $9,000, reclassifies two support positions. This mainly reflects changing job requirements with the new database. They're finding they need really less basic clerical support and more support for data management and data archiving. And package 101, increased costs for hearings officers and attorney general, $106,000. Two main issues here. One is that they have now become a part of the Central Hearings Panel. They were one of the small agencies that in the past heard a lot of their hearings themselves didn't pay hearings officers to do hearings, but used board members to do most of those. So when they came into the hearings panel, there will be increased costs as they need to start paying hearings officers. It's a little early to be sure what those will be. We're pretty sure about the hearings officer costs. There could be potentially higher attorney general costs associated with that as well, but partly with that, we're going to need to just wait and see. So this package, $14,000 of this package was aimed to cover the increased costs in hearings officers. The other $92,000 is to cover attorney general costs. This has been an ongoing problem for the agency. They've been substantially under budgeted for actual costs for two biennia now, and 2001-03 would be the third. In 1997-99, they were able to absorb those increased costs, but were not able to in 1999-01. And as Sue pointed out, they did just go to the emergency board in January, received limitation for an additional $104,000 for attorney general costs. Because that emergency board was so late, it didn't roll up into their current service level. So they do have that presented as a policy package. Finally, on the fee changes, they are proposing a fee increase that will be effective January of 2002, or towards the end of the biennium. That will bring in about $300,000 more revenue, and that is built into the governor's budget. They did come last session with a bill to change statute to increase their cap. So, and actually the fee will not go all the way up to the cap. It'll raise the fees from 60 to 75. The cap is at 100. I have here fee bill for ratification. LFO has decided we don't really need to do this ratification process ahead of time. Our idea was we could do it ahead of time and not come back next session and ratify it, but we're going to stick with the old process of letting them raise the fees administratively, which they would do anyway, and then come next session and actually do the ratification as a result of the Senate Bill 333 process that we do on the fees. And that concludes my summary. If there's any questions.
Yes, thank you, Linda, and thank you, members, for holding the questions. Senator Trow and then Representative Schrader.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, whatever. I was involved in helping to develop this new process we're using, and I like it, and I think it's going to be fine. I do think, though, that it should not be a kind of way of keeping the committee from being fully involved with the witnesses, and I think especially during the agency's presentation, we ought to be able to question at the time things come up.
Okay.
And I would just suggest that, because I think that allows us involvement. This agency is not a big agency with a complicated group of tasks, but some agencies are very big and have lots of things that probably need to be talked about. And I think you just need that freedom to be able to ask questions and to spend some time with them on some of those things. So I guess I would comment about the procedure. In Senator Miller's committee, we did spend time talking about some good things, and we got pretty much done with it in one day anyway. But seems to me that's good. I wanted to ask a first question about the application fee for this national certification. Seems $2,300 seems excessively high for any kind of certification fee. Why in the world would it be that expensive?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the process is fairly extensive. It takes more than a year for the candidate to assemble the portfolio and to have it evaluated. And then there is an extensive test, a computer-driven test that is administered through the Sylvan Learning Centers. When the national boards first began offering the national certificate, the application fee was $2,000, but this past year it has gone up to $2,300. It is a major concern.
Do they think that that's what it costs to administer such a process to get this kind of certification?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, I'm not sure what the cost profit ratio would be for this, but it is a nonprofit foundation that's operating it, so I'm sure that the people who are members of the of that board do look at that. In Oregon, our superintendent from Portland is a member of the national board,
mm-hmm.
and Ben Canada is in his first term with that. We've had other Oregonians who have served on the board also, Leonard Anderson, a teacher from Portland, and Vera Katz was a member of the first appointed national board members.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we could get the answer to the question you have, but I don't know.
Well, I know we want to encourage our teachers to go through that process to get that kind of certification, but if there's that initial discouragement of that much of an application fee, I know there's some attempt to find some money to help alleviate that, but it seems to me like that there should be some way to pull that fee down to something that's more reasonable for teachers. Most teachers can't afford to do that.
Mr. Chair, that's why the commission has introduced Senate Bill 324. With the hope that we could have ongoing support rather than just a spurt of assistance and then have it disappear again.
No. I like the concept, but it doesn't seem to me like also that the Oregon taxpayers should necessarily have to pay for this. And maybe they should, but is that what your bill does? Is it ask for some general fund dollars, or what does it do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, no, it just establishes a fixed fund that could be from any source, and our plan was to seek private funds or federal funds,
okay.
and then to use the interest from that to pay for these scholarships.
Okay. A second question. A lot of your activity in the discipline committee comes, I suppose, as teacher certification might be put in jeopardy by certain kinds of conduct. My guess is that's in part why your attorney general fees are high, as a result of that activity. What's sort of the track record of that activity these days? Are we involved a great deal in doing that, or what?
Mr. Chair, Carolyn Ortman is currently the chair of the Discipline Committee and has served on it for several years and has a good deal of firsthand experience. Let me ask her to speak first, and then I'll give you some statistics on the actual cost.
Okay.
Senator Hartung and Senator Trow, one of the problems that we have experienced is increased numbers of complaints. We get that as an increase because of child abuse, to be really honest, complaints around computer use, very inappropriate computer use. We've seen a big increase and have had to deal with that. The increased costs that were discussed have to do with the fact that with so many more cases coming on, and in your paperwork there are some actual statistics, but a number of years ago, we were looking at 119 total cases, and our actual for the
annually,
and our actual eight month so far at this point is 135. We anticipate that number going up to about 180 this year. That just the sheer volume creates those kinds of increases. Plus, we do use the Attorney General's office, especially with our hearings officers, in an attempt to try and not have to go to the hearing officer, but to settle it prior to that, to see if we can come to some terms. That requires some Attorney General fee that we didn't have as much of before. So both the increase in the numbers. Even with those increase of numbers, the one thing I would want to point out that I have to remind myself as a non-educator, or non-trained educator, but working from the other side as a board member, we have 35,000 people licensed as educators in the state, and when we deal with even 180 in a year, that's a very small percentage. And so I always want to be careful that people know that it's not reflective of our total teaching population, but just a small number as we would find in any part of our society. I'm not sure if I totally answered your question, David. You might want to...
I think you gave us some good idea. Okay. How much of your Attorney General's problem does relate to the that activity, which I think was an essential activity? I'm not criticizing it. But,
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, 99% of our AG cost is for discipline cases.
Mm-hmm.
We do get advice from the AG after a legislative session. We get advice from them on things like the use of social security numbers for identifying clients and that sort of thing. But for the most part, it's for prosecution of cases. And you'd be interested to know that about a third of the cases that involve some sanctions are settled with no AG costs. The commission has established a track record on some of these fairly routine cases, like misuse of the computers to download sexually explicit material. The commission has routinely suspended a license for 90 days and put a person on probation following psychological evaluation. And the attorneys that deal with us on that recognize that that's the best deal they likely will get. And many of those cases are settled with little or no attorney general costs. But when you get a big case, then you really run up an enormous bill. We had two of those last year. One was $15,000 to revoke a license of a person who was having a sexual contact with students. And we had another one that had actually exceeded $26,000. Our budget was only $94,000, so those two cases used up half of the total budget for the biennium.
Mm-hmm. A third question relates to the central hearings panel. Is that going to be cost effective for you, the central hearings panel?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we've had only two cases actually reach a hearing before the hearing panel. It does seem to have a deterrent on protracting the discussions about settlement, and in that regard, it is good for us. The two cases that we had before the hearing panel were pretty much open and shut cases. One person had been convicted of felony perjury in another state. Another person had a conviction for a required revocation, one of the sexually related offenses. So we don't have much experience to see what a real full-blown hearing would actually cost. We do incur some continuing cost, however, for the hearing panels, even if we don't use them much. We had a hearing scheduled in Klamath Falls, for example, that was to take 2 or 3 days, and that case settled on Friday evening before it was scheduled to begin the following week. We still ended up with about $1,000 in hearing officer costs just in getting ready for that hearing. So we're still a little nervous about what the total fiscal impact will be. It was not totally free, though, even if the commissioners were doing the hearings. Under the old statute, the commission was required to have either three commissioners or the full commission do the hearings, and we would end up paying for substitutes for two or three of the panelists and travel and meals and so on.
So it may be just as inexpensive to do it this
way? In this regard, I think that actually conducting the hearing may not be that much more expensive, but it's the amount of time that's used before the hearing and after the hearing and writing the order. We were not paying for that previously.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Cho, and thank you for your comments about dealing with the budgets, and as we get into the more complicated and ongoing, we'll certainly do that. And I do appreciate your comment about national certification. David and I have had some a lot of conversation about that, and I share your concern too. I'd rather spend our time and energy on our 35,000 teachers here rather than getting, we now have 17 nationally certified teachers, if it's going to cost taxpayers money to get that done. And I know it's a very long process. I had one person told me it was took more time, it was more difficult than getting his doctorate degree. So I asked myself, you know, does that improve the learning opportunities for our children in the classroom? I don't think so, but maybe it does. And so we will continue that discussion. Representative Schrader, and then Senator Gordley, and then Representative, and then Representative.
And then a senator, I believe, also, sir. Put me on your list, Tommy. A little bit of follow-up on some of the concerns that have already been stated here. With regard to the central hearings panel, then you disagree a little bit with DAS that there are no increased costs of the central hearings panel as of yet. It's actually been a wash so far. The nodding of the head means yes, I guess.
Mr. Chair,
what we're saying.
Representative Schrader.
Yes, Mr. Smith.
With regard to it being a wash, in our experience in the first year, yes, but we did feel it was prudent to budget for at least two or three hearings. It could be protracted to 5 or 6 days, and it would easily take $14,000 that we have in that policy package to conduct those.
I guess I follow up, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
I guess I'd like LFO, not just for TSPC or nursing board or whatever, to keep track of this, because this is a big issue. Senator Cho, I think, hit the nail on the head. This was supposed to be a fairness thing, not an increased cost, particularly to all these small boards. There's lots of different agencies that now are going to be using this panel, and I think Ms. Minton's correct. Theoretically, they already had to do a certain amount of hearings. They had to pay for it anyway, and we were sold that particular bill based on the fact it would not cost a whole lot more. So I think it'd be important. This is one of the things that LFO is probably the central coordinating person or agency, if you will, to track this for legislators and say, well, it looks like it's not working out as well as we thought for agency's protection as well as taxpayers' protection and frankly, those fees. I consider the nurses and the teachers, I had nurses this morning, but teachers as taxpayers, and they're paying fees, and that comes out of their pocket, so they want to make sure they're getting the right value. Second question, sir.
Certainly.
Following up on the chair's concern about the national board certification, I guess I would like to see some data showing that those people that, because this is a big trend nationwide, Colorado's pushing it big time, and maybe it's a great thing, but I share some skepticism. I'd like to see the data that those 17 teachers, their students in their classrooms are getting, are routinely and consistently getting better performance results than other students in comparable classroom situations. In other words, that when I look at their report cards for those teachers in those classrooms, those students are obviously substantially better than similar students in similar classroom settings, socioeconomic settings. I'd like to see that data at some point in time, if that's possible. Probably not for this budget, perhaps, but certainly I think that would help us all in terms of making those decisions. One more, sir. With regard to the costs that you're seeing, I guess I direct this a little bit to LFO as we discuss this. I look at the trend on their document page 3. They list a trend of TSPC complaints, and they show that for 2000-2001 looks like there is going to be a big increase. But I look at all the previous years, and they look pretty even, actually. And I guess my thought would be, if it's not the cost of the central hearings panel itself, but indeed some different types of cases that have occurred this year, is there a way to grant them some sort of increase in a limited fashion? Not really asking for personnel, so it doesn't seem like a limited duration person, but perhaps to see if this has to be an ongoing thing, or is this a blip on the horizon? Maybe next year or next biennium there'd be a continued trend, and then that would justify going on. And then the other thing I'd ask LFO to address a little bit is the use of dispute resolution process rather than just AGs, particularly based on Mr. Minton, I'm sorry, sir, comments about how lobbies can be resolved before hearings, and that's a lot cheaper way. When I was on the public safety sub last session, that was a lot less expensive and perhaps less adversarial way to get at some good conclusions, and AG's office doesn't always get to that point. Maybe that's something that would help save teachers some money and get to quicker and speedier results.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, certainly one of the things that the subcommittee could do is you could go ahead and approve in part or in total the policy package for the increase in the AG costs, and then you could have part of that unscheduled. You could request DAS to unschedule part of that pending the experience that occurs during the biennium. Maybe they wouldn't need all the limitation, and the DAS would just keep some of that expenditure limitation unscheduled. So that's one way to address that. The other thing you could do is well, this is expenditure limitation, Mr. Chair, so what you could do is either approve the policy package again, not in part or even not at all, and just have them come back to the emergency board if they continue to experience the increase in AG costs in 2103.
That's what they have been doing.
That's what they had to do this biennium, yeah. Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And then I would just ask Dr. Mighton to address the alternative dispute resolution issue. If Representative Schrader wants more information right now.
Yes. Deputy Sue?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, your first question had to do with, are there any definitive studies on the effect of National Board certification? Most of the reports that have been done thus far are anecdotal about people attesting that it was a good professional growth experience and that it did change their perception of the way teaching should occur. Just in October, I believe it was, there was one national study that was released, a blind study in which people who had stood for National Board certification were followed up and visited in their classrooms, and there was an attempt to see if there was any improvement in student learning gains. And after the study was concluded, they then found which of those teachers had been nationally certified and which of them had not been. And it was statistically significant, the improvement in student learning for those who had acquired the certificate compared to those who did not. But the evidence is still pretty limited. With regard to your second question about dispute resolution, we have in the budget a small amount for dispute resolution, but we have not used that in that way. We've used AGs in trying to get to settlements, but we have not used the dispute resolution. There is quite a bit of specific language in Chapter 342, which governs the commission, about how the notices of opportunity are to be given and how subpoenas are to be issued and how release of information following the hearing is to occur. And we've used them in trying to follow those statutes in these kind of cases, but we have not attempted the dispute resolution.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Senator Gordley, and then Representative Peters.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I thank you again for the opportunity to participate with the Ways and Means Committee this afternoon. Good afternoon, Mr. Mighton. Good to see you again as well. I have some observations and then questions and then a couple of concerns that I hope that you are able to respond to this afternoon. First of all, an observation, looking at the goals for 2001, the commission goals for 2001, on page 2 of the document from Mr. Mighton, it appears that I was frankly looking for the phrase cultural competence as a goal. It's in Goal 3, you do say that TSPC will monitor and enforce the highest standards for culturally competent and ethical educators. But I'm wondering how the conversation about getting to a culturally competent teacher workforce is occurring with your commission. And I say that recognizing that we need a greater sense of urgency in our state about this, about achieving this goal, and we need to be much more aggressive than we have been in our schools of education in terms of the kind of curriculum that teachers are exposed to, and all of that has an impact on how students are, of course, taught in the classroom. So again, my first observation is that it appears that cultural competence isn't a stated goal for 2001. So how are you talking about it as a commission? And then I have a follow-up after that.
I'm going to give that a shot first. Senator Hartung and Senator Gordley, is that right?
Carolyn, please speak up a little bit louder. That doesn't amplify.
Doesn't help? I have to put my board chair hat on and scream. The goals that are stated there are, they're very much working statements, and the executive committee is working very hard to do a lot of wordsmithing. To be very honest, we spent a number of hours at our last session really talking about these goals and feeling that there needed to be some clarity. These are some carryover goals from last year that we're working on. And I would tell you that the conversation that you're having, that you're addressing, has been discussed in goal number 4.1. And it's a good example of where we think some of our executive committee needs to do some work, where we talk about solving shortage issues. We do, when we talk about diverse groups, we're talking about multiple kinds, and we think we need to do a better job as commissioners. And that's a separate responsibility than perhaps the staff of the agency, where we need to be working on some of those types of things. So it is a conversation that we are having. It is ongoing, and we are aware. And I'm a little disappointed in myself that we didn't have that prepared. But being on the executive committee, I wasn't aware that that would be included in the budget. So I would be prepared when we have that to send that to you so that you could see some of the work that we're doing on that.
If I may follow up.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I appreciate the response. I would say that the intent, you're having the discussion, but the intent needs to be more explicit, and the actual word phrase needs to appear in the goal. And secondly, in looking at the this document, the Oregon Quality Assurance in Teaching Program, the OQAT. OQAT.
That's a different one.
Again, with the emphasis on quality assurance, in looking at the initiatives or the goals, the statewide goals in this document, I don't see that phrase either, cultural competence. And so I'm wondering how this particular group arrived at this kind of document without that phrase being identified as a goal.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, the concern about diversity is reflected in both of these statements in terms of ethnic as well as cultural diversity. But you are correct that the phrase you're looking for doesn't appear in either of them. We have done several studies of teacher supply and have concluded that Oregon really doesn't face an imminent shortage of teachers across the board, it certainly does face a shortage of minority persons in teaching, and that the number of minority students in our classrooms is growing rapidly, and our success in recruiting additional staff from these underrepresented groups has been nearly a failure. It's only about 3% of the people coming out of the teacher education programs at the present time are people of color. So it is an urgent concern. I recognize that. We are doing one other thing, and that is that a bill that was passed last session, and I can't think of the number of it off the top of my head, but required the Department of Ed to look at the opportunities for diversity both within the Department of Ed and in schools. They've been encouraging us by inviting us to participate in that process. So there are some things going on that aren't reflected in these papers, but you do point out an issue that is of continuing concern.
Mr. Chair, yes. Let me continue. I appreciate your response, and my questions and observations are only partially about our state need to attract, recruit, train more teachers of color. That is certainly something that we should be doing. But I'm also concerned about the teachers that we are currently training in our schools of education, in the university system, statewide university system, but also in our independent institutions. And I am wanting to know what your thinking is about how we get to cultural competence as a goal, as a standard for certification. We're not there yet. So how do we make that more of a priority than it seems to be now for the TSPC, or more than I'm hearing it is now for the TSPC?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, what are you, could you be a little more explicit in the thing that you're looking for here with regard to, are you looking for a particular course that people would have completed, or are you looking for some kind of demonstrated competence at the end?
Demonstrated competency, and it could come through a series of courses. It could come through demonstrated teaching in the classroom. But what is our standard? It sounds like we don't have one. And so that's what I'm trying to get my arms around. How do we get to a place where, as a state, we recognize that as a value, and we identify cultural competency as a standard that we want all teachers to meet before they go into the classroom?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, the standards that the Commission has for its teacher education programs do require the institutions to be aggressively recruiting diverse students, and they do talk about dealing with students from diverse backgrounds. And all of those competencies that are in the standards for the approval of the programs are to be documented before completion of the program. But the specific kind of language that you're using does not appear in the standards, and if it is not encompassed in that concept of diversity, then that is an area that would need beefing up.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll end there and just say that I would like to continue the conversation with the commission and its members. I think this is an area where our state needs a lot of work, and I'm not the only one who thinks that. I'm trying to present a series of questions that a number of folks are raising in different communities around the state, people who are concerned about whether are the teachers that are coming into the classrooms of today are prepared to deal with the diversity that is in the classrooms today. And the question, the answer to the question is mixed, depending on who you talk to. And what I'm hearing from the TSPC is that we don't really have a standard. It just feels like we haven't really given a great deal of thought. And maybe I'm overstating that. Your responses are not assuring. I'll put it that way. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Senator. And Carolyn, as chairman of the commission, you can play an important role, because I know in the Hillsborough School District, your student population is really diverse, and I know that you have a very great need for teachers in certain disciplines. And Senator Gordley has been on the Interim Committee on Education and last session on the Substantive Committee of Education, that really took the leadership on, you know, enhancing the professionalization of mm-hmm. teachers through teacher education. But what's most important is, you know, in every classroom, in every schoolhouse, we have to have competent teachers that can, you know, take care mm-hmm. of those children, because they all learn different and have different needs. Senator, Representative Winters, and then Senator.
You've elevated me already.
Yeah, promoted you. Some would question that. Promotion.
Just a couple, two quick questions. One, and if you called your agency, I'm going to be Senator Duncan now. If you called your agency, would you be pleased with the response that you received? If you picked up the phone and called right now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, not today.
Three
people who are ill today that are normally answering phones. With regard to the question, would I get accurate information and would I be pleased?
Would you get a live person?
The second part is the piece that is not as good. The problems with keeping up with all of the ways to contact an agency now is nearly overwhelming at times, because you get phone calls, emails, and posted letters, sometimes about the same issue. The commission has invested and is working with the DAS IRMD folk in improving the kind of web-based services that we'll be able to provide. We get a number of calls about, you know, what's the status of this person's license. Those calls come from the district. We get calls from the individuals asking about the expiration date of their license and asking for renewal packets and that sort of thing. We think that the web is going to provide an important additional asset for us in terms of responding. But telephone answering machines have become the commonplace of most industries, and they're very disturbing to some people, especially educators who come out of a classroom between classes and want to make a quick call and run into a telephone answering machine.
Which also may mean that they don't get through, so they send you an email. So you're giving them either way. Another follow-up question. I'm interested in the comment that you do not have a primary link to benchmarks. In looking at these goals, and I want to go back to where Senator Gordley talked about the goals, and they're very nice statements. My problem is that I would like to see where you have some target that you're shooting to, so that, you know, we're talking about not just the number of complaints, but how long is it taking you to resolve them, so that we're getting to some substance, some efficiency substance. When I look at this and if I track the case pending across, you know, even though, you know, you went up in between 97, 98, and you're down in 2001, but what this does not tell me from a budgetary, from a standpoint and looking at it, is how long did it take you to get from point A to point B? And it goes at a processing issue for me. that it would be nice that you set some targets that we will have X amount either reduced or increased so that when you come to this body, we've got something to hold on to and we don't hear. When I look at your goals, they're just goal statements, and it doesn't tell me how you plan to get there, and I guess that's what I'm saying, Mr. Chair. I'd like to have some information on how you're planning to get there and how soon, how many bites are you planning to take this interim, and if that's possible for you to do that, to provide that information for us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, the Commission hasn't completed the task that began last July with Nancy Golden from the University of Oregon. They were not satisfied with the previous system we had for setting priorities because they didn't have those kind of timelines and expectations in terms of turnaround. And I can't tomorrow provide that kind of information for you, but I can tell you that the Commission's Executive Committee worked on this task as recently as the January meeting and has it as a high priority for this year, not only establish more clear goals, but also expectations with regard to production.
Mm-hmm. Is it something that if we took just your complaint and disposition categories to work on that on a timeline that maybe somewhere in the future we could have some of that in, you know, where there's some targeted information.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winters, I would hope so. I've asked the commission for that information, and what I was told is they were still in the process of refining that and working on it.
I believe that as we're working with agency budgets, that this was a question that we're asking all agencies, that, you know, that they set some benchmarks and they set some against their legal responsibility and those standards, so that we then have something to measure as we look at budgets. And so that might be a note that we might want to make.
Mm-hmm. Further questions, Representative?
No, that's
okay. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to echo the concern that you and Senator Trowe and perhaps others have expressed about the cost of the national certification, and I would just observe that whereas perhaps now general funds are not provided, suggesting we're not having the taxpayer foot that bill, the response I heard that it might involve private funds, which are likely taken as deductions, or federal funds, I still view that as taxpayer participation. I wanted to ask a question about charter schools. And right now the requirement is what percentage of the teachers in a charter school must be licensed by the SBC?
50%, Mr. Chair, of the teachers must hold a regular license, and the other 50% need to be registered.
And do you all take a view as to what the appropriate percent is? Do you have any policy recommendation? Are you intent to leave that 50% figure in place? Do you think it ought to be more, ought to be less?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, the number was set by the legislature, and the commission has attempted to implement it. And we believe that it will require cooperation from the districts in order to make this work. But in terms of what we've seen is that most are not at the 50% mark, that the at Lourdes School, for example, they have 100% licensed personnel, so it may not be as big an issue as we had thought it might last legislative session.
And so in any event, if you've got figures like that, then you're not looking to make any changes, I suspect.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, we have established a registration process, but we've had very little traffic in the registration so far. So, no, we didn't have any plans to make changes.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I might ask, with respect to the Attorney General's costs that you did not anticipate and are let me just ask you about what is your view as to the quality of the service you received from the Attorney General's office?
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, we have absolutely no complaint with the three assistant AGs that work with us. They have been very responsive to our needs and I think very fair with the candidates who are before the commission.
Having said that, it's my understanding that in the current budgets we're now examining that a part of each of those budgets is an assumed increase in the Attorney General's rates of 18% for the coming biennium. My question is, do you believe that, given your history with this office, that you're going to receive substantially better counsel based on this dramatic increase in fees, or would you perhaps think that you could get by with attorneys who would only charge you $92 per hour or $96 per hour?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a basis for responding to that question, but we have not had a lot of turnover in assistant AGs in the years I've worked for the commission. That's an indication that the relationship between their office and ours has been beneficial to both, I think.
I understand that. I just would observe, hopefully for the benefit of others, we've discovered in a budget earlier today, I mean, this is one of those fees that hits, well, anybody who uses the Department of Justice, and is a very large increase. And for those who might have other programs that they favor besides enhancing the salaries, I guess, of attorneys, this is a place to look for us to be able to do more things for education or whatever our priorities might be.
Thank you, Senator. And also, I want the committee to understand, and you, David, particularly, and Carolyn, that you know, it's not my intention to lead this committee away from that national certification. In fact, I think there may be a way, as Senator Miller suggested, that we can, you know, finance this without taxpayer expense. The Ford Family Foundation has a very great interest in this. In fact, they've held a conference which I attended, and they have hired some very outstanding educators to lead this idea, and I think it's really good. I would want to see it tied to, you know, if we're going to expend any time or our resources with this national certification, that we then use those teachers as mentors or in some way in our staff development and training and whatnot. To me, that's the only, you know, rationalization for doing it in the first place. Otherwise, we're just forming an elitist group that has something a little special that the masses don't have. But I'm really interested in seeing that we do this cost-effective. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You kind of summarized some of my statements. I have a short question and a longer one related
Certainly.
To national certification. And this might be good for you, Mrs. Ortman, to answer, as well as Dr. Mighton. Has there been any discussion of having a technology requirement for licensure?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hobson, from an executive committee standpoint, no. From a program committee, I don't serve on that portion of, I'm not that intimately involved, so I'm not sure. I can tell you from my district perspective what I think, but that's a different committee and a different time. So I'm going to refer that to Dr. Mighton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, in the redesign of teacher preparation that I mentioned earlier, the commission had authority to move forward on that by virtue of 1997 legislation that created the new license names and so on. And we asked the institutions to resubmit their programs, and the issue of what they were doing with technology and what access students had to the various new media were reviewed in every one of those programs that was considered. But this is a pretty fast-changing field, and there's still a lot of need for the institutions to share what they're doing among themselves. At the last meeting of the Association of Colleges for Teacher Ed, which was January 10th, David Morrison, who's a faculty member at the University of Oregon in educational technology, spent most of an afternoon talking
Could you speak up just a little louder, please?
Excuse me. Spent most of the afternoon talking with the deans of education about the technology and the role that the universities could play in it. So I can say that it is an issue that's been addressed both in program review and also in terms of in-service of the deans of education.
Okay, another question if I might, Mr. Chair. Dr. Mighton, you mentioned a Senate bill that's being introduced to be a holding tank, if you will, for funds to support the national certification. Is that coming forth now through the process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, yes, it's Senate Bill 324. It's scheduled for a hearing tomorrow afternoon.
And a follow-up, if I might. Dr. Mighton, would this, in fact, be a place, during the last series of teachers who participated in the National Board, the Oregon Education Association gave $2,000 per head, so to speak, toward that. Would this be a viaduct or an avenue where that type of money or from the Ford Foundation would go?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, in the last two rounds, the Commission and the OEA have joined together. We had an offer from the National Board from a federal grant that they had to pay $1,000 of the fee. And so the OEA paid $600 and TSPC contributed $500 for 24 teachers. And out of that 24, 17 did acquire the national certificate. It was an experiment to see how much incentive it might take to really get people to step forward for this, and also to try to begin to get some visibility for it, because Oregon had no nationally certified teachers prior to this joint venture. So I'm not aware that they had put as much as $2,000 into it, but the combined total of what OEA, TSPC, and the national boards did came to $2,100, and the candidate paid $200.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. And I did realize that it was a total of $2,000, and the teacher then was required to pay $300, if I remember correctly.
Chair, yes, it was either $200 or $300 that the teacher paid.
And one more. The intent is not to have it funded by general fund monies or TSPC monies in the future. This viaduct is to collect, for instance, if the Ford Foundation comes through, Ford Family Foundation. That's where the money is coming from to pay for that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that is correct with regard to the TSPC proposal. There is another proposal out there also, it's Senate Bill 250, that would create a general fund support, and this bill came from the Department of Education to support the mentor teachers and national certification.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair. First, I want to hear from Representative Smith. Say something.
Well, how do you do?
How do you do? Good afternoon.
No, I'm just very intent on listening and learning, and I have no questions, which I know is pretty unusual for me. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for being here, Senator Trill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know I'm going again. Just briefly, though, this time. I would hope that somehow or other that the subsidy that goes into that national degree or national licensure program would go at the level of reducing the cost so that the license fee could come down to something reasonable like $500 or so. And if it costs more than that, it's subsidized by the Ford people or whoever interested in doing this at the level of lowering the cost. It seems still obscene that an application fee is that much. And it's going to create an elitist group and not and not going to allow equal opportunity to get that license. At least that's my view of it. The question I have is with regard to your disciplinary measures that you're taking. I noticed that, you know, you suspend licenses, you revoke licenses, you reprimand. I don't know how good a reprimand is. You give probation, those things. It looks to me like you don't have the ability to fine. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, that is true. The commission is limited to those four sanctions, reprimand, probation with conditions may be attached, but the probation cannot exceed 4 years. A suspension may not exceed 1 year. A revocation may be permanent in a number of cases, but even if it's a permanent revocation, the person can reapply after 1 year. The commission is required then to deny the license and go through the process again.
If you had other sanctions less stringent than revocation of a license, would you use them and would they be helpful? And I'm sure it would take legislation to get that ability to do that, but many agencies do levy fines.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, a greater array of possible sanctions would make it possible to settle cases. When it's a matter of either suspending or not taking any significant action, the candidate, you know, fights that very vigorously since it's a loss of income. Other kinds of sanctions could be employed. At this point, though, we have just the four.
Have you ever asked for additional sanctioning power?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we have not, no.
Thank you. David, is there anything that we can do, we as legislators, new policy or the statutes that would, I guess, discourage, I would say, you know, lawsuits against our teachers? Of course, if they're legitimate, we want them to be there. And as part of that, in my mind, I remember what we went through on the fingerprinting to pick up people, and now that we're not going to, the people that have been fingerprinted once and are still teaching, they will not be fingerprinted again. But there's no loophole in there. Is there, for instance, if one of the existing teachers is convicted of a felony or something, we pick that up immediately, and the teacher, well, that would be suspended?
Mr. Chair, the courts have certain reporting requirements if they are sex crimes or a severe felony. Crimes, the judges are required to report to TSPC. The commission also requires superintendents to report when they have knowledge that an educator has violated standards in some way. And then in addition, even though we don't do the fingerprinting at renewal, we do have the LEDS terminals and do the LEDS check. So we pick up on any arrests in the state of Oregon. If they've gone out of state and committed a crime because we don't have fingerprinting at renewal, we wouldn't be able to pick up on that.
Are there further questions? I want to thank the committee. We're going to quit a little bit earlier. You know, as you recall, last time we met, why I got co-chair Hannon a little bit excited when I said I wanted to get into the K-12 budget sooner than was scheduled. And so what I'm asking you all to do, and Mr. Chairman, if you're listening, watching, I've not asked you to, as a committee or a subcommittee, to pursue all of the things related to the K-12 budget because there is a lot of information and rumor out there, but please study that. And the other thing, not very often do I recommend reading material that the unions put out, but the OEA today's, they've got a great article on Great Expectations. How well is Oregon prepared? It has to do with the quality of teaching, and I'd recommend a good reading. Instead, I've read it once, and I must confess it's in the pure legalese or of the educators. I've got to read it again to really understand what it means. But somewhere along the line, Senator Gordley, I want you to come before the committee and give us background on what you are doing and have been doing on enhancing the professionalization of teachers and the work that you've done with the teacher colleges, and we'll schedule that down the line here sometime.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that opportunity, and I may want to come to you with a budget note for the TSDC, but we'll talk about that.
Fine, thank you. Any other questions before the committee?
Mr. Chair, if I could just make one comment. I don't think Dr. Mighton completely went through his entire handout. He was to discuss in more detail some of the items in the governor's budget, and we can do one of two things. You can go ahead and adjourn early today, and we are scheduled for a public hearing tomorrow as well as a possible work session, and he could complete that tomorrow, or
Let's do that. We'll complete that tomorrow. Any other business? We are adjourned.